Hello, I'm Simon Mundy, and this podcast is the first of two exploring the cycle of eight Schubert symphonies recorded live at the Styriarty Festival in Austria with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Nicholas Harnoncourt. The start of the Andante of Schubert's First Symphony, a gentle way to begin this journey through the symphonies with Harnoncourt and the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. They were performing in July 1988 in Graz, the main city of the province of Styria, which, in Schubert's day, had reached from southeastern Austria right down into parts of modern-day Slovenia and Hungary. Graz was Harnoncourt's hometown, and when Schubert dropped in from Vienna, Harnoncourt's great-great-great-grandfather, the Archduke John, the brother of the Emperor, was the governor. So there was a sense of all being in the right place for the 1988 performances in the Stephaninsaal on steamy July nights. The recordings were made by Austrian Radio, and had been released by ICA Classics to mark 40 years of the orchestra, and, sadly, 5 years since Harnoncourt's death. One of the orchestra's violinists is Christian Eisenberger, who also comes from Graz. Although he has played with COE all this century, he was not in these performances. However, he was heavily involved in transferring the radio recordings to disc. He explained how he came to plan the release with the COE's general manager, Simon Fletcher, and why Christian thinks it's special.
When I got the Schubert symphonies, it was more or less exactly a year ago, actually, I listened to the first movement of the first symphony, and there was the plan to include one or the other symphony in a box set. And after listening to the first movement of the first symphony, I immediately called Simon and said, come on, change of plans. We should release the whole symphony cycle as a box, as a single box, because it was so amazing that I didn't even listen to the end of the symphonies. It was so good that I thought, this has to be out. No way around it.
Thank you.
That vigorous and decisive opening to the First Symphony was typical of the way Harnoncourt liked Schubert's music to go. Nothing too safe, an immediate challenge to the audience to sit up and listen, and a challenge to the orchestra to be on the ball from the first note. This was one of the things that Christian Eisenberger thinks makes Harnoncourt's readings distinctive.
My way of listening to music anyway completely changed after I met him the first time. So everything for me changed completely. I remember the first time I played with him was my first project with COE. It was in Graz. And we did do Midsummer Night's Dream, Mendelssohn. And I thought, oh my God, he comes from baroque music. He's, this original historic ideas and everything. So what is he going to do with Mendelssohn now? And I remember very much when I was there, I sat at the last back desk of the first violins. We call it suicide corner because you can't hear anything and you can't see anything. I was anyway scared to death when I joined the orchestra, and then there was this overture, and the first notes were actually a big shock for me because they were together and in tune, and this was something completely new for me. So I said, oh my God, what's going on here? And then Harnoncourt started working on an early romantic music, which was completely unexpected for me. And he was so amazing that after 10 minutes, I was completely hooked on his way of music making.
Nicholas Harnoncourt was one of the pioneers of the reinterpretation of music from the classical period. Trying to get back from the late Romantic and early 20th century accretions of tradition towards a crisper and more lively sound, less reverential. He started his own orchestra, Consensus Musicus Wien, but as the years went on, he took his ideas to all the great orchestras of Europe. He was 59 when he conducted these Schubert performances. His wife Alice, herself a violinist and part of Consensus Musicus Wien, as is Christian, said of them, "One is immediately seized by an incredible energy. We can sense the musicians' enthusiasm and reciprocal understanding, their ability to use their knowledge to tease out the meaning and the colourful language of this music. We can hear the works infused with new life."
Thank you.
the Minuet, the third movement of the Fifth Symphony. Playing first flute in these concerts was Thierry Fischer, nowadays best known in his own right as a conductor. He'd first played with Harnoncourt in Zurich, and he was determined that the Chamber Orchestra of Europe should have a chance to work with him.
As I was already playing and very involved with COE, I got a phone call here in Geneva one day. Can you come tomorrow morning to Zurich to play for Harnoncourt? They didn't give me any details, so I was very surprised. It was with the Zurich Opera Orchestra. So I was actually busy, but so much attracted to Harnoncourt's personality and musicality. He was, when I was listening to his CDs, I just could not believe this was ever possible. It's like going, you know, to the other side of the planet, and you see, you have seen pictures of the scenery you're going to see, but when you see it, you say, but how is it possible that this amount of beauty and ecstasy and everything is ever possible? So this was my approach of Harnoncourt. So when I listened to his CD, so when I received the phone call, I said, first of all, I thought it was a joke that a friend was just, you know, because I was already campaigning for Harnoncourt everywhere and playing the CDs in evenings with friends and said, this is, you know, one aspect of the truth, I imagined. And when I arrived the next morning, so I cancelled what I had to do. It was chamber music stuff, easy to cancel. And I arrived the next morning, took the train at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was introduced to Harnoncourt. And I was expecting, you know, a warm handshake and thanks for joining on the last minute. Nice to meet you. And then, so I arrived in a corridor in the opera in Zurich. I remember very well. I could even tell you how he was dressed. And then he arrived, Herr Fischer, nice to meet you. Can you play without vibrato? I said, well, I hope so. Well, I think, but I mean, you let me know. But you know, I'll definitely do everything you like. So I was like completely paralyzed. And honestly, this first rehearsal, we were rehearsing the opera, The Entführung auf dem Serail, by Mozart, and he was asking things for the Turkish music parts to the percussion player, asking them to play with pieces of wood and then a newspaper, you know, like whipped on another piece of percussion instruments. And it was Mozart and it was everything. I was in heaven. I said, I am here sitting in front of a man who will change not only my life, but I mean, especially my life, because he's showing us that everything is possible, that all the conventional way we have been educated, with the highest respect for my education, musical education, you know, this is only the beginning of what we as artists, we are actually having, you know, the responsibility to do, to create, to invent. So in a few minutes, I got this notion that everything I could, wanted, do musically in my life had to be a reinvention every single bar, every single minute.
And did you suggest that he come to Chamber Orchestra of Europe? Did you talk to him or did you talk to the orchestra first?
As far as I remember, I talked to June McGinnis at the time and to a few colleagues around me. And then I remember I had the green light from both the players and June. And I remember like it was yesterday when I went, it was in Zurich, because then I played many, many months and I did nearly 2 years with him in Zurich. I had this very special contract, mit Harnoncourt Verpflichtung, which means I was employed by the orchestra, but I had the obligation to play for all Harnoncourt services and nothing else, which was for me the best contract ever. And I remember, and I told him about COE, and Alice was, his wife was there too. And they were both looking at me like, I remember Harnoncourt was eating an apple. He was always eating apples during breaks. And he said, yeah, why not? You know, but he didn't show any enthusiasm. I had to tell him that what I knew of him in these rehearsals in Zurich, if we knew each other a little bit, and what I knew of COE, that I kind of very perhaps arrogantly believing that the match could be something unforgettable, but in the sense that it could be something that will musically be a big stamp in everybody's life, both his and ours.
Terry Fisher playing the flute elegantly at the beginning of the Fifth Symphony's lovely Andante con moto, the second movement. In our conversation, you heard us refer to June McGinnis, who was the orchestra's general manager at the time. Two other players who were integral to all these 1988 performances in Graz were the double bassist Enno Senft, who's been in COE since the beginning, and his wife, violinist Elizabeth Wexler. They too found the experience of playing with Harnoncourt extraordinary, and we discussed his approach to the last two symphonies, starting with the Eighth, often called the Unfinished.
This can be disputed, of course, but there is a logic to it. There's a dream sequence that Schubert had actually written down, and it's been documented, that he could run along the Unfinished, and it finishes after the second movement, and the symphony is complete. So, with that in mind, he really constructed these two movements as a complete symphony. And that's something that's, was really revelatory for all of us and really consistent. He would not compromise on any of his ideas. And that's also important.
And that idea of the Eighth Symphony being complete anyway, yeah, is quite a modern idea, because now a composer would say, I've said everything I want to say in my symphony, and therefore it stops. Mm-hmm. In Schubert's day, you were expected to do all the movements because that was what was expected, but it was sheer convention.
Exactly.
And it was a recent convention then, of course, because it was only 50 years before that a composer wouldn't have thought of breaking it up into movements anyway.
These are just very small examples, but it went through the whole cycle of the Schubert symphonies. And the year before, we'd done the Haydns, which also was a really real highlight, and it actually led straight into the Schubert. It was the whole of that Viennese classic repertoire. We were really it's like a masterclass from one year to the next, growing on from Haydn, Mozart, Schubert, Beethoven, and then we went on to Brahms also, and Schumann, and Mendelssohn. So it was a real timeline and a real development for him as well, for Harnoncourt, not just for us. It was a real learning curve.
Schubert was particularly unlucky that very few of his symphonies were performed during his lifetime, and when they were, the performances were under-rehearsed and perfunctory. It's not surprising, then, that in his 20s he worked on quite a collection of symphonic movements without ever stitching them together. There's been endless speculation over the decades about whether the two movements of the Eighth Symphony were intended to be four, or whether Schubert was content to leave them as they were, a pair that add up to just under half an hour of music. symphony fades away with a resigned sigh. That was not the end of the matter. When Schubert came back to the form with a ninth, he not only wrote a full set of movements, he composed the second longest symphony ever written at that time, only surpassed by Beethoven's ninth of a year or so before. Despite its length, though, Enno Senft says Harnoncourt was less interested in its symphonic characteristics, and Elisabeth Wexler says how closely that was tied into the Austrian instincts of both composer and conductor.
Also in the Great C Major, which was very moving, and it was not this image that maybe you'd have of the huge big contrasts that Harnoncourt creates. It's much more than that. And really, it's the intimacy of chamber music, and particularly Schubert's chamber music, transported into the symphonies. It's the same language and the same content or similar contents. And I thought Harnoncourt was really coming from that tradition way back in his family and having grown up in Vienna, and I think he even went to the Schubert Gymnasium, and also the literature background that he had. He was almost a contemporary of Schubert's that would come
along. In a way, he was, in the sense that his great-great-grandfather had been the Archduke in charge of Graz when Schubert was visiting it, and who were using some of the same buildings.
Particularly for the non-Austrians of the orchestra, getting a flavour of the dialect of the music from the connection with Austria's own character. That was very important for him, for us to understand the language.
Little examples like the slow one of the Great C Major, sort of how he explained how there's a line that keeps on trying to get going, but in the end it just doesn't get there and then deflates. So it's an image of somebody who's trying to achieve something, trying to say something, and then is simply not heard, and then he sort of deflates into his inner self. And he really explained that very well, and musically it just made complete sense if you listen to the opening of the slow movement.
Start of the Andante con moto of Schubert's Ninth Symphony, the Great C Major. The complete set of the 1988 performances is now available in a 4-CD box from ICA Classics, and the catalogue number is ICAC5160. We'll finish this episode with the tumultuous final bars of that ninth. I'm Simon Mundy. I hope you'll join me again when I talk more with the players about the recordings and explore the context of Schubert's works.